Now, 10 years ago today, former Republican Governor Scott Walker held a press conference to introduce the bill now known in Wisconsin as Act 10. The proposal sparked big protests as unions warned the plan could redefine organized labor in the state. As Sean Johnson reports, they were right.
Just 2 days after Walker introduced Act 10, teachers were already gathering outside the Wisconsin State Capitol. It was a small group at first. Some gave speeches.
Listen up, guys! This way, please!
We could lose this fight!
Charles Patton, who was then a teacher from Wausau, warned that if the public viewed this fight as a dispute over teachers' pay, Walker would win.
We must help our neighbors. All of the citizens of Wisconsin see that union rights are every worker's rights.
Days later, the protest crowd numbered in the thousands. It included teacher Diana Calopi of Whitewater, who decided she had to come to Madison to try to stop Walker's bill.
Life will probably never go back to normal unless this gets killed.
Eventually, though, Republicans passed the bill, and Walker signed it. In the state that was the birthplace for public sector unions, Act 10 was now law. In a recent interview reflecting on the 10-year anniversary of the protests, Calopi says she's still teaching in Whitewater, where teachers continue to keep their union. But these days, not everyone pays their dues.
We clearly don't have 100% membership anymore, and a lot of it's financial. That's the number one reason people tell us they can't do it, because they can't afford to have anything else taken out of their paycheck.
Looking back, Charles Patton says Act 10 changed everything. He left Wausau and took a higher-paying teaching job in California.
It's partly financial, yes, but it's also cultural. And so there's some of that. The progressive Wisconsin of my youth, I think, is gone.
10 years after Act 10, organized labor forges on in Wisconsin. But being a union member today means something different. For most public sector unions to even exist, they have to get a majority of all members to vote every year to recertify. They can only bargain for small raises. Other benefits are off the table. Before Act 10, the percentage of all Wisconsin workers who belonged to a union was well above the national rate. University of Wisconsin-Madison labor economist Laura Dresser says a decade later, it's lower.
This policy really mattered to union density in this state.
Union membership dropped here from about 15% in 2010 to less than 9% last year. No other Midwest state saw a steeper decline. Wisconsin Democracy Campaign Director Matt Rothschild says union spending on lobbying in Wisconsin is also on the decline.
Unions in the Capitol in Madison are not throwing their weight around as much as they used to, for sure.
The last legislative session before Walker took office, the Wisconsin Education Association Council had a total of 17 lobbyists and spent almost $2.5 million trying to influence state government. Last year, the teachers' union hired 2 lobbyists and spent just over $70,000. Still, Wisconsin AFL-CIO Director Stephanie Bloomingdale says the Act 10 protests lit a spark for unions that continues today. People saw unions fight for their members. She says it was meaningful.
That strength of conviction and that willingness to continue to persevere because of what we believe in is so important. That is a moment in our collective history that will never be forgotten.
Others aren't so sure. Patrick Wyckoff is the executive director of Ask Me Council 32 in Wisconsin, a public sector union that represents everyone from prison guards to custodians. He says people have a romantic view of the Act 10 protests, but Wisconsin's workforce has changed.
The majority of our potential members and members weren't employed here for Act 10. So this is history to them. It's like 9/11 to my kids. It was a once-in-a-lifetime thing that we went through, but my kids don't remember it.
Wyckoff says these days his union concentrates on working conditions, a lot like the union his dad and grandpa were in. But it's a far cry from the kind of union Wisconsin workers knew just 10 years ago. Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Now we continue to look at Act 10's legacy in Wisconsin. In an interview with the morning show's Kate Archer-Kent today, former Governor Scott Walker defended the law, saying that Act 10 has saved taxpayers billions of dollars, and he said it went beyond that.
This put the power back in the hands of those local officials, the people that we as citizens elect in our state to run our government, and not just for budgetary reasons, but to for example, staff based on merit, pay based on performance in our schools and our local governments. That means they can pick the best and the brightest and keep them there.
Public sentiment on the law remains mixed. We want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Did Act 10 affect your job and your workplace? Do you think it was the right decision 10 years ago? Did you march on the state capitol 10 years ago? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. David Knack is a professor in the UW-Madison Department of Labor Education. David, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
We heard some of the numbers there in that report from Sean Johnson about the changing nature of public employee unions. You've studied how unions who represented public workers reacted and tried to adapt over the last 10 years. What kind of things did you find?
Well, we looked at four major unions, AFSCME, American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees, AFT Wisconsin, American Federation of Teachers, Service Employees International Union, and WEAC, Wisconsin Education Association Council. And of course, all of these unions have lost significant amounts of membership since the passage of Act 10. It's kind of a mixed bag. Some have adapted better than others. All of them, I think, have suffered to a considerable extent at this point. I did want to mention that on one point, I disagreed with Sean's report in that unions can and do still exist even without collective bargaining rights. And they are right now here in Wisconsin among public workers. Oh, geez, I lost it. God.
What's that? Hello?
Are you there?
Yep, I hear you, David.
Oh, good. Okay, sorry.
Okay, no, we're good. Sorry. So can you talk about what a union that doesn't do collective bargaining, what kind of things then are they doing?
Well, first of all, they still can organize and communicate with the workers that are their members, that they're representing. They can also communicate with management. They can also communicate in the public arena with the general public. They can focus on specific issues, both in the workplace and also in the community beyond the workplace. And I think some of the unions, most notably, I would say WEAC, are doing exactly that. Others are, as I said, have suffered a lot of loss of membership and are still trying to find their way.
As we heard from former Governor Walker there, whatever this has meant for public sector workers, he made the case at the time and still does that in the long run, government is able to work more efficiently, more productively, saving money. Do you, from the perspective of looking at the labor groups, do you think there's an argument there?
Well, from the perspective of the labor groups, I think that there's been a significant loss. First of all, a tremendous turnover, so a lot of experience that's gone from the workforce. A lack of morale. When people talk about Act 10, they sometimes forget that actually it was a group of laws, first of all. Mm-hmm. And second of all, it did, of course, greatly restrict collective bargaining, but more than that was involved. So public worker compensation was pretty largely affected in terms of cost shifting for health insurance and for pension. And basically that represented about an 8% decline in real take-home pay at that time. And it's been that way ever since. So, there's a loss of compensation, which of course ripples throughout the entire state in terms of public workers having less money to spend. It's as simple as that, actually. So I think he leaves out that part of the picture. You could also talk about various other cuts the state made at the same time, most notably in education, where there were, significant cuts to local education.
We're looking at the state of unions in Wisconsin 10 years after the passage of Act 10 with David Knack, professor in the UW-Madison Department of Labor Education. You can join in at 800-642-1234. 1, 2, 3, 4. Share your thoughts on Act 10 10 years later. Was it the right decision by the legislature and the governor? Or do you think it's had a bad impact? If your job was affected, let us know how. If you were a superintendent of a school district, say, or work in local government managing people, the idea was it was going to save your organization money. Did it? Did it work out that way for you? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with David Knack, who teaches in the UW-Madison Department of Labor, talking to him about how labor education, I should say. We're talking with him about how Act 10 changed the face of the state where public sector unions began. You can call in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts on the 10-year anniversary of the introduction of Act 10 and the labor laws it changed for public sector workers here in the state. Let's go to your calls now. John is with us in Eau Claire. John, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to kind of give my perspective. So I'm an engineer, and I've spent my adult life kind of working in manufacturing. And one of the things I've noticed is basically that a lot of the unionized facilities, a lot of their labor ends up getting moved to states in the South that just do not have the same kind of unionized environment or whatever. So I guess my thing is, are we actually facing a choice where it's like unionized labor or no manufacturing jobs at all? You know, that would kind of be at least my observation. So,
John, thanks for the call. David, John, taking us to private unions there. Have you seen an impact on private labor unions, maybe spillover effect from Act 10?
Actually, yes, there have been in a number of ways. First of all, some of those unions, at least, also had membership in the public sector. So in those cases, they were actually directly affected by the changes brought about by Act 10. But beyond that, I think the caller is right. This is part of a bigger picture. And certainly Wisconsin, which has always, or at least for a very long time, been a significant manufacturing state, has been subject not only to plants and facilities moving south, but in more recent decades, being subject to the vagaries of the global economy. We've seen a lot of plant and equipment that has been offshored, move overseas, a lot of production, which is being automated at the same time, all of which tends to reduce good paying jobs in the private sector. Also, sort of as a twin in some ways, though not an identical twin, to Act 10 has been so-called right-to-work legislation, which basically bans union security agreements in negotiated contracts between unions and employers. And that, you know, has happened here in Wisconsin, a number of other states here in the Midwest, quite recently in the last few years. Before that, Wisconsin and other Midwestern states, for the most part, were not right-to-work states. And right-to-work itself is something of a misnomer because it might imply that people somehow have a right to get a job if they want to work, but it actually has nothing to do with that. It has to do with what I just said, to ban or at least hold not legal union security clauses in negotiated agreements.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We'll go to Margie now in Balsam Lake. Margie, hello.
Hi.
What did you want to bring up, Margie?
Well, I'm a state worker. I'm 74 years old, and I've worked for the same agency for 22 years. When Act 10 came through, it was not a good thing because right away, my hours were reduced and things started to change. But now that I'm this age, they've done a drastic change. And I know there's not supposed to be discrimination due to age, but I know there is. I've had to get a second job. I make, good wage at my state job, but I don't have enough hours to really, to live on. So now I have two jobs. one at Walmart and one at my state agency. And I know if the union were still here, because I saw other people have problems, and then the union rep would come in and help us negotiate with our employer. Well, now, whatever they want to do, they can do, you know.
Margie, thanks a lot for the call. Margie raising concerns that without the union, she doesn't feel like she has protection against, in this case, age discrimination, David.
Yes, and I think there's more than that even, because one has to wonder, it sounds to me like she's feeling a little bit forced to work. I think she said age 74, mm-hmm. and one wonders why a person who's got that kind of background shouldn't be getting a pension they could live off. So these are the kind of questions we have to look at as a society, really. I think most people are aware that Social Security alone, it's very hard to live on that. And what we're seeing with pension benefits is a constant erosion over time, which actually is continues to put a squeeze on working and middle class people.
Thanks for the call. Going out to Jeremet in Montello. Jeremet, hi.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. I can speak about the negative impact of Act 10, both from the standpoint of the student as well as the teacher. I was a teacher for a number of years before WEAC became WEAC, and I had absolutely no job security at all, nothing at all. And I was a teacher for 9 years teaching in Milwaukee. My class size, my smallest class size at the time was 36 students per class, and I had up to 38 students per class. When WEAC came along and began to work with the legislature, we were able to reduce the class size. WEAC was able to reduce the class size to around 20 to 24 students per class. Now, that wasn't in every school, but that was in the school that I was teaching in Milwaukee. But looking at the data that comes out, Wisconsin dropped from 8th to 32nd in terms of class size ranking in the country in class size alone.
Jeremy, thanks for the call. And David, that was an argument at the time of the passage of Act 10. And since WEAC, for example, making the case that their advocacy didn't just help teachers, it helped classroom conditions for kids. What do you think of Jeremy's thoughts?
Well, I absolutely agree with that. As a graduate of a public school system myself and a son of two teachers, I can tell you that 38 children in a class is way too many children. And yes, when you have smaller class size, you are going to be getting a better education process taking place in the classroom. There's almost no doubt about it. I would also point to a recent study of the Center for American Progress, which talks about the various ways that teachers have been adversely affected and how it's affected public education overall. So I think these are part of the prices that we've paid that came along with Act 10. Probably Governor Walker doesn't want to talk about those prices that we continue to pay, but that's part and parcel of this package.
Have the declines in union, public sector union membership in Wisconsin leveled off since the declines in the years immediately after Act 10?
I would say probably. We looked at data from 2010, which was before Act 10, and then 2017, which was some years after. And I would guess that if there are still membership declines, they probably are somewhat leveling off. In some cases, though, they've been very significant for some unions.
As you look to the future, it doesn't look like there are any likely changes coming to Act 10 and the laws that were part of it. What do you see as the future role of public employee unions here in Wisconsin?
Well, I agree with you that it would probably take a Democratic governor and a Democratic majorities in the state legislature to undo Act 10. And hard to predict when that would happen exactly. In the meantime, many unions are functioning, in some cases, not all that differently from the way they used to function in the past. And as I mentioned, that's most notable in WEAC, but I think it's also true in some other locations. It's true that collective bargaining issues are highly restricted, But then there are other ways to unions have found to engage with management, discussion over rules that go into employee handbooks, which maybe address the exact same issues that used to be addressed in collective bargaining agreements, informal discussions with management, labor management committees on specific issues or problems. All of these continue and, you know, at least potentially could be implemented elsewhere as well. I think there would be a need for public worker unions because public workers, like all workers, like to have a say about their living and working conditions and basically their life on the job.
David, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Been a pleasure.
That's David Nack, professor in the UW-Madison Department of Labor Education. He joined us for a look at the 10th anniversary Act 10 and its effect on Wisconsin and unions.